tastes like lemon and grass.
I want a totally different pre-podcast routine today, so we'll see how it goes.
what'd you do?
I got orange juice for my beverage, just a tall glass of orange juice.
That's gutsy taking acid before being on mic.
I know, dude. That's what I was thinking, too. Probably wasn't the smartest choice on earth, but here we are.
Extra pulpy.
I don't mind the pulp. Are you
dude,
a pulp guy?
Dude, I love pulp. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Bring it on. Everyone's like, oh, get the no pulp. I don't want pulp. I'm just like, dump those chunks in there. Let's dance.
Yeah, I'm like, I will chew my orange juice. I don't care.
Oh, man. That's going down so good. I put ice in it. Nobody ever puts ice in orange juice.
I've never heard of that.
I did it just because I was like, all right, so as the ice melts, it'll make more orange juice. So I'll have more.
I mean, yeah, I guess you can't argue that logic. What brand are we talking?
It's, I think, store-bought from Concentrate. Store brand.
Okay.
Kroger
nice.
Brand, I think. But I don't all know
right.
for sure.
Yeah, let's go Krogery. Kroger Plus.
Yep. Pick that up at the King Supers.
Awesome.
You guys have King Supers out there? What do you have? What's your grocery store?
So Smith's is the Kroger brand out here. Mm. It's funny because I signed up for a card and I keep using my parents' card.
Nice.
Because I'm just so used to using their Kroger card throughout the years. We have something called a Fresh Market.
Okay.
We have a few other smaller ones, and then of course we have like Whole Foods, Trader Joe's. We have
the classics.
Something called Natural Grocers or Nature's Grocers. I think it's Natural Grocers. It's like a small local organic place, but the prices actually aren't so bad. But I think it's regional, or at least in the U.S. Yeah,
we got one like that called Lucky's, and it used to be a somewhat moderately sized regional chain, and now I think there are only two stores left. Including the one here in Fort Collins. It's pretty good, though. I like Lucky's a lot, so I'm always down to go down to Lucky's.
Yeah, I wonder where the other one is.
I think it's in Denver. I think they're both here in Colorado.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. We looked it up one time because we were curious.
Nice. Yeah, I can always get down on the Natural Grocers. There's always some weird crap where I'm like, might taste terrible, but I want to try it. Something catches my eye. That banter took a good turn, so I think I'm just going to leave it there. Not even going to wedge my thing in. I'll save it for later.
What was your thing?
I'm going to save it for later, just in case.
Okay.
Who knows? Maybe it'll actually be a show topic.
Ooh.
As we start running out of ideas.
I mean, these show topics are going to get weird. I was looking at the list the other day, and I was like, this is going to be starting to get tough.
Yeah, we're really getting into the thick of things now with just, you know, a few months left, and
yeah, we might have to have topics that are like, these albums all came out within this 5-year span. Oh, cool.
Shout out to all the Scorpios for albums that came out in November.
Yeah, exactly. Holiday shopping season, here comes the latest from... Wait, let's do that. That sounds good. I'll do that. All right. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Definitely stick a pin in that one.
All right. What do you got?
They know they've got everything that a host needs to get a fan. How can they lose with the stuff they use? 36 episode 36. Oh, what a winning pair. They're a brick house. There we go. Oh,
perfect.
Little Commodores.
Mm-hmm. I almost joined in at the end, but the delay in the mic, if we try to sing the same thing, it doesn't work out. So I just was silent. But nice work. Nicely done. Did you have a lot of choices for 36 this week?
A few that referenced 36, 24, 36, which is what
sure.
I lived for this one. So I was like, when you're gifted something that good.
Good for you. All right. You want to introduce us? I forget. We've done, 36 episodes now?
Yes.
And I always forget the order that we do these first initial steps in.
Yeah, so welcome to episode 36 of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
So, of course, we all know that song. But how much do we know about today? And how much do we know about ourselves? Today on Maury. What's on the docket today?
Maury. Is Maury still out there kicking around? He probably is, isn't he?
I think so, and one of my greatest regrets in life is that I had tickets to see Maury, and I overslept and missed the bus from New York to Connecticut.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I think Maury would be a fun one to attend. I think that'd be a good time.
Dude, it'd be an absolute hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be a riot.
Yeah.
Okay. What we are doing today. I'll have to admit, I stole this idea from the local radio station. They were doing a similar thought. So what we're doing today is directives, albums, titles that are commands telling you to do something. They did a little weekend show with songs that were directives out here a couple of weeks ago. So it popped into my brain when I was trying to come up with a theme this week. We had exactly six. Well, I guess maybe a couple more than six.
I always like listening to radio stations in different towns just to see like...
Oh, this one's great too. It's called the Colorado Sound. Okay. So it's all donor funded.
Mm.
And they play deep cuts and all kinds of cool stuff. So it's really, really good, actually. They're online. Check them out. Colorado Sound.
Dude, that's the best. Yeah, when they just are like, we're going to do whatever because we can.
It's awesome.
So freeing. So liberating.
Yep. 105.5.
It's like podcasting without pants on.
Yep. Number one preset.
Sweet.
Can't hype them enough. But that's what we're doing. So we had a couple others we could have gone with. What was the other Beatles one we could have gone with?
Let It Be.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So almost had the exact right amount. Just like I think 2 weeks ago, I had the exact right amount for our theme. So we're getting down to the nitty gritty. They're going to get weird, folks. Just going to have to deal with it. All right. So jumping into this week here, when I sent you the album list, did you have any initial thoughts?
I like the idea. I was familiar with a few, so I was definitely looking forward to it. Yeah, I enjoyed this week.
I was very familiar with most of these, so I was ready to rock. And a couple I really wasn't, so I was looking forward to checking them out. Let's jump into the first one then. That would be Get the Knack, which is a debut album from The Knack. It was released June 1979 on Capitol Records. At the time, this thing was one of the most successful debut albums in history. Like, it went bananas right off the jump.
Dude, it's insane. And it has a connection to another album that we're listening to this week.
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
We can talk about that. Now, we already mentioned we're talking about a Beatles album. We might as well mention it.
Yeah.
So, we're going to be talking about Meet the Beatles later on. And they kind of modeled their album cover and design on that album, which is interesting.
And the most famous song, My Sharona, from this was the fastest selling single to 500,000 since Maybe I Want to Hold Your Hand. It was a single off of Meet the Beatles.
Nice. The other thing that I discovered, the actual sticker in the center of the album, as it's Capitol Records, they, in their contract, The Knack, when they signed with Capitol Records, they said, we want to have the same rainbow sticker that the Beatles had on Meet the Beatles, which also was on Capitol.
Oh, wow.
So that was cool, too, when I found that.
Maybe that's what it was. It was the fastest selling to 500,000 from Capitol Records. Yeah.
So, are you familiar with The Knack outside of My Sharona?
Only Good Girls Don't, which I think was like their almost other hit. But I mean, this is like straight up one hit wonder territory right here.
And it was huge, which is funny to me.
Yeah, that is funny. It's like it was huge and then no one gave a shit after.
Mm-hmm. So I have some more fun facts later on in here. But what are your initial thoughts of The Knack here?
It kind of wore me down the later it went on. And I feel like at times I can hear a little too much of what influenced them. But yeah, I'm looking forward to your fun facts, and I'm looking forward to talking about it some, yeah.
I may have lied. I don't know if I have any more fun facts or not. I can't remember what I type, but we'll find out.
I've got one for you if you don't.
Okay, cool. So, jumping into it then, what are you thinking on the A side here?
I mean, it just comes flying out of the gates with Let Me Out. Ripper. It's like a poppier Buzzcocks almost.
Yeah, it's a very poppy album from beginning to end, but it's not bad at all. I actually will say I enjoyed this one. I'm kind of with you, though. It did wear me down at the end. A lot of the style on a lot of the songs is very similar. It's just a very similar album beginning to end, but certainly it wasn't bad. They know how to write a hook, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's kind of how I was feeling. I was like, thematically, okay, we get it. You're horny.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to hook up. We get it. You can play these chords, but it was quite bombastic at time. The next song,
Your Number or Your Name.
Yeah, Your Number or Your Name. So I didn't really have much about the song other than like the snappy and the snappiness and the drums. But how did this sound on your speakers, dude? Because it sounded really good.
It did. Yeah, it did. It sounded fantastic.
Okay, but yeah.
Most things do. I mean, but it did. Yeah, it was great.
Not to brag, but...
Yeah.
I was like, is this just the remastered version or what? Because, I mean, the production is awesome. Yeah, what are you thinking on the A side?
The album itself, it is pretty well produced. It was produced by a guy named Mike Chapman, mm-hmm. who had written some songs for Sweet back in the 70s, which I thought was interesting. So, yeah, it was produced very well. The only real note on the A side was Selfish. She's so selfish. I mean, it's kind of a misogynistic song, but the thing that caught me is they like slipped in as many different cuss words as they could, which cracked me up. For like a poppy radio friendly song, they say fuck a few times, they say bitch, they say shit. They're cramming them all into this song, which cracked me up.
Yeah, it's like maybe they were the first pop punk band.
It's possible. And I do think that one got radio airplay, and they edited it or something. But
there is an edited version that instead of saying fucka fucka fucka, they say toucha toucha toucha.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Did you happen to find that one when we were looking?
Yeah, so that's actually what I listened to first, was the edited version, because that's what was on Spotify. Then I was researching the album some because Mike Chapman, because mm-hmm. I was like, God, some of these songs have such a sweet quality to them.
They do.
And then I started reading about She's So Selfish, and I was like, wait a second, I need to find the original. And I found it and was like, oh, yeah, that's different.
Yeah. Speaking of the sweet, track 6, the last one on the A side, Good Girls Don't, the one you already mentioned. Total sweet vibes from that one. Got some harmonies and some good hooks. I actually really dug that one. I can see why it was maybe popular with the kids at the time. Mm-hmm. Definitely some youth-oriented. This whole thing is very youth-oriented. The whole album is very aimed at the kids, but doesn't mean it's bad. If I was 16, 18 years old in 1979 or whatever when this came out, I'd have dug the hell out of this.
If you were one of the 16s, which is a Mike Chapman song.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
Bringing it all together.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, to me, it's a little weird when adults target to kids.
But... Right. These guys are in their mid-20s at the time, writing to kind of high-school-age kids. But that makes sense because they were dating a high-school-age kid. That's what the song My Sharona is about. So track 7, My Sharona, is the song that people are going to know off of this thing. How do you feel about My Sharona?
Honestly, I've never actually liked this song. I thought it was like... a minute and a half too long and kind of annoying. The Weird Al parody, that slaps, but...
What is his parody?
My Bologna.
Yeah. A lunch meat-inspired song?
Yeah, apparently the band really liked it and helped him get a record deal. Because it was his first hit. Yeah.
Weird Al, wherever you are, sir, keep on doing what you're doing. I salute you. Yeah, so this was written about... one of their 17-year-old girlfriends. And the interesting part of it is the person who wrote the song was not actually the person who's dating the 17-year-old. It was the other guy in the band. Huh, and he was kind of infatuated with her, which is hilarious and weird and creepy. But that's where this came from.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah, definite yikes. But as a song, I mean, it's clearly a hit. Like when you hear it, it's like, it's got this kind of stomping beat. Like, clearly a hit. Great hook. Great solo. It's obviously the hit from this album here.
Sure.
And that kicks off the B side. Anything else on the B side standing out to you?
Heartbeat, I thought, was a fine cover of a Buddy Holly song, which to me it was very fitting, because this is where I really just started hearing like all their influences come together, even if it was a little derivative at times. And Siamese Twins had some really ridiculous lyrics again.
Yeah, Siamese Twins, in parentheses, The Monkey and Me. That all ought to tell you about what's going on with that funky little thing.
I gotta say, dude, what's that?
Yeah, go ahead. What are your lyrics? What do you got?
sits on my back, shits on my back, piss on my back. I just never knew the Nack were just so weird and filthy.
They are. What else you got? Anything else on the B side here?
I don't. How about you?
Not really. I got to say that in looking at this and thinking about listening to it, I would say this is pretty solid. I enjoyed the vast majority of this. It did kind of wear on me at the end, but it's mm-hmm. filled with tight, poppy hooks and memorable lyrics. Like I said, if I was a kid in 1979, I'd have been very into this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, yeah, it was targeted them with just kind of the dumb, horny shit at times, but really solid production. Musicianship was outstanding. Apparently their live shows were really fantastic, and I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I know we don't normally do the 7 scale on non-greatest hits weeks, but this is like a solid 5 for me, I would say. All right, let's move on to number 2. So second one up this week is the debut album. So we got 2 debuts in a row. The debut album from the band Autograph. This one is called Sign In, Please. It came out on October 9, 1984, a couple weeks before Ya Boy showed up on the scene. It was RCA Records here, and it's got their one and only hit, Turn Up the Radio, on it. So you said to me before we did this week mm-hmm. that you didn't know much about Autograph, and I said you're going to know one song on there. Did you know the one song?
When the chorus hit, I was like, that's the one. Yeah. I definitely didn't know the band's name. So I absolutely thought this was going to be a prog album based on the cover.
Mm-hmm. This is one I've mentioned before, I think. I met the person who designed this cover. So it's got a metallic hand on it with, like, I don't know what's going on. Some laser light beams shining off of it. Pretty cool. So when I met her, Margot Nahas, pretty cool. I met him at a little event here in Colorado.
That's awesome.
A couple years ago before the bullshit hit.
Did they sign all 3 or?
Oh yeah, all 3 of my albums that they did are signed. In fact, I might have a 4th.
I wonder how often they get the Autograph one.
I don't know. I was talking to my dad about this because there can't be too many album or people out there who have the album signed by the person who actually did the cover. I'm sure they're like that are signed by bands and stuff, but by the person who actually designed the cover, kind of cool.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of cool. I'm surprised more people aren't out there. Maybe they are.
It's art. I mean, yeah. Anyway, let's come back to Autograph here. So I've definitely listened to this album before. When I first got a whole bunch of albums, I was going to go through and try to listen to them myself and make little notes on them and stuff.
Mm.
And so a lot of the A's I have done. So Autograph, I've listened to this before. I was going to go alphabetically. So I kind of knew what to expect. How about you? What did you, you thought it was a prog album, excuse me. So it obviously isn't.
It isn't. And it took me about 15 seconds for me to be all in on this.
Really? Okay. So you were in with Send Her to Me. The glam lost love track that kicks it off.
Dude, cool. It was like Van Halen meets LA glam rock. The vocal clarity was awesome.
Yeah, super glammy.
Dude, yeah. Drums designed for an arena. Like, you better believe I would have been clapping my hands over my head if I ever saw them back in the day. And like the keys and the guitar solo just... Chef's Kiss. Very close contender for Song of the Week.
I love it. I love it that that's the one that grabbed you. Because I like it too, but man, the next track, the actual hit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, I listen to an album, I look for songs that aren't the hit to kind of get me going. But on this one, honest to God, when the hit hits, I was like, I was ready to rock. I would have been with you in the front row clapping along to Turn Up the Radio.
It's awesome, man. Like, that little momentum build, and there's that nasally little, turn it up!
Yes! Great hook. Like, this is a perfect example of what good glam metal can be. Like, this is just really good to me.
The video you sent me for this. Dude.
A gem of a video. Sponsored very obviously by Papermate Mechanical Pencils. The video features them signing into, like, a little sign-up form. And there's like a RoboCop robot standing there telling him to sign in. And a Papermate mechanical pencil appears in a beam of light next to them. And then they use it to sign in. And the reason they did that is Papermate actually gave him some money to make that video. So it was kind of like an endorsement.
I wonder how common that was in the 80s and like who else was throwing out weird endorsements.
I don't know. It was an idea of their manager. Apparently she was like, sign in, please, is the name of the album. Let's see if we can't get a writing utensil company to throw a little cash our way.
Oh, man.
I support it. Honestly, yeah. That's a fine idea. Although product placement is one of those things that I'm very in tune to for whatever reason. Uh-huh. So like when they try to hide it in TV shows and stuff, I'm just like, get this shit out of my face. Don't try to sell me a Coke while you're solving a murder mystery or whatever. Get out of here.
Yeah, they think they're being very coy. And I'm like, no one places the can down like that.
Right,
and, like,
get out of here.
It's such a line of sight.
I didn't mind it in this music video. I don't know why. Now, this song also has a special place in my wife's heart because it reminds her of one of her favorite comfort movies, which is Hot Tub Time Machine.
I haven't seen that.
Cinematic classic Hot Tub Time Machine. She loves it. Absolutely loves it.
It's a perfect soundtrack song.
It is. And She is very soon going to have a child, and she has requested we bring a copy or download Hot Tub Time Machine so she can watch it while she's in labor because it's that comforting to her.
Okay, so I was literally about to make the joke that you're going to have this on cassette and be playing Turn Up the Radio.
Turn up the radio!
And I wasn't too far off. That's okay.
Damn, it's a good song, dude. Turn Up the Radio is solid. I gotta say, it's solid.
Man, it's good time rock and roll. Some great shredding, yeah.
19 and Nonstop, the next song. A good glam rock track, dude. Yeah. Good little hook. I don't understand 19. Is it supposed to be like a play on 19? I don't know, but...
Yeah, that was... The lyrics were kind of dumb.
Yes. But you got any others?
The keys were awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the keys were cool on this whole thing. There's occasional keys that are pretty good.
I like the part of the song, too, where it's, like, clearly a video game soundtrack or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... Yeah, that was pretty fun. What do I have?
Deep End kicked ass. I don't have too many notes on Deep End, dude, but I remember it kicking ass.
My note is this is really top shelf beer swilling rock.
Yeah, it was a little heavier, like a big pounding beat. More of like a hard rock song than a glam rock song.
Mm-hmm. Lots of denim, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. The leadoff track on the B-side has one of my favorite names of track and lyrical content of any song. My girlfriend's boyfriend isn't me. Hilarious.
You know, it makes me feel so bad to know her kids won't call me dad. She was the best I ever had. Her kind of loving drives me mad. They say three's company, and I know what it means. What a riot.
It's awesome, dude. My girlfriend's boyfriend isn't me.
Yeah, when I saw that song title, I was like, we're in for something good.
I bet these dudes are funny. Just looking at them on the back of the album, they look like just some goofy dudes. I bet they have a pretty good sense of humor.
Man.
So, anything else on the B-side? I got one more that I loved.
Which one?
Friday.
Yes.
That son of a bitch. If I could play that every Friday night and just blast off, have two beers and go to bed by 10 p.m. and just really enjoy that song. I dug Friday.
My only note was, goddamn, I wish I knew this song back in my heyday.
I know. I'm saying I want to hang out with Autograph on the Boulevard on a Friday night in 1984.
Oh, absolutely. My God. Man, they pulled me in. They kept pulling me in just when I thought I was lost. Mm-hmm. They found a way to get me.
Final thoughts.
Fuck me if I just didn't have a good time listening to it. Like, what's wrong with me?
I gotta say, I did too, man. I don't think I could give it the highest praise ever, but it got me rocking. I enjoyed listening to it every minute of it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and like, I don't even know if it was that good, but it was that great.
It was fun.
Yeah.
And music should be fun sometimes. Maybe not all the time, but it was definitely fun.
I'm with you.
Let's jump into the third one. The oldest one this week. And we've got Meet the Beatles. It is hard to explain the early Beatles discography because they're releasing things in the UK and in the United States. This is the second one they came out with in the United States, but only by like a couple weeks, which is hilarious.
Oh my God. Okay.
So like there were competing labels trying to get something out in the States, like get something Beatles out in the States. And it's hilarious because this one actually says on the cover, the first album by England's phenomenal pop combo, Meet the Beatles. But there was another company who got the rights to something and put it out like a couple weeks before this one came out.
Oh, wow.
So pretty iconic cover. It's kind of the one that the Knack were trying to emulate with theirs. A company called VJ Records was able to get one out before this one in the United States. But I don't even have the name of it. So
wonder what happened to VJ.
Yeah, this one was obviously much bigger.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
So it's even hard to talk about it just because it's so iconic. Like, what are you even going to say about this? This is all of their early monster hits to me.
So last week we were talking about albums I picked up after we talked about, and I remember what the third one was when I grabbed this one off the shelf because I have this one. It was Abbey Road. So now I know that there's a fourth one we haven't discussed yet. With that said, I have this one on vinyl. So it was fun to dive into. I have the mono version. I don't know what the fuck that means, but I have a mono version of it. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, it's all the both speakers are playing the exact same sounds.
Okay.
They're not, you know, it's all the same sound, whether you're talking left speaker or right speaker. It's all coming out the same. And it's like, I have the mono one too, by the way. So we both heard it the same way.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, so are you more of an early, middle, or later stage Beatles? Because I'm cool with whatever era.
I'll tell you what, dude. Normally, when you ask me that question, I would say my favorite two Beatles albums are probably like Revolver and Rubber Soul time frame. And probably still are. But listening to this, I was like, holy shit, like early Beatles stuff is really fun to listen to. This was a blast. I love this album.
I'm with you, man. Like, I love this Tip to Taint. It's just bangers galore.
It is. Even the track, there's one track on here that even Paul said this is kind of a filler track. Even that song is good.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's just full of, like, good songs. Like, I loved it beginning to end. But what are you going to say about it? I mean,
that's where it's like you start off with I Want to Hold Your Hand. Love the track. One of my favorites from the lads from Liverpool. The claps, the rhythm. Like, yeah, it's iconic. Like, it's a song of the week contender. But what can I add to the discourse?
Right, exactly. I saw her standing there, the track two. Another ripper. That is my song of the week. I love that song, dude. It's fantastic. I have like no notes on it because I wrote, I wish I could type everything I feel about this song, but I just can't even put it into words because I love it. Early Beatles kicks ass.
There's so much just crammed into like 2 minutes and 15 seconds or whatever. And
it rips. Yeah, all the songs are pretty short and they actually rock pretty hard. Like, she was just a 17.
Speaking of 17.
Those dudes know how to write a song, man. It's funny. Most of these songs on this album, if you like look at who gets credit for them, they're mostly both Lennon and McCartney.
Mm.
But I also feel like you can hear which one influenced the songs a little bit more. Like, oh, this is a Paul song. This is a John song, that sort of thing. I think you can kind of tell.
It's funny you mention that. I have some notes on that a little later. Well, this is on the B side.
Okay, I was gonna say the last song on the A side, and honestly I could talk about every song on here. Like This Boy, track two, fantastic. It's like John Lennon's take on Motown. It's tremendous, soulful, and it's terrific. It Won't Be Long, that track four, it's like British beat music. It's like Dave Clark Five almost feeling, but I dug that one too. Track six though, All My Loving, that was the one that was just like, okay, this is a Paul song. I know it's credited to John Lennon and Paul McCartney. This has got to be a mostly Paul song
for sure, which is interesting because I thought George Harrison and John Lennon's guitars both sounded phenomenal.
They are, yeah. But it's such a poppy great song, like fantastic. All right, so B-side, what you got?
The one where I was like, this is such a Paul track and it's such a signature Paul track was Till There Was You. It was a cover.
It's a show tune.
Yeah, like you can really tell that, like, who transcribed it.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. That's another one where Harrison and Lennon's dueling kind of guitars.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Like, George Harrison's playing like a little Spanish style guitar on that one.
Yeah.
Really cool.
You know what I thought was really cool?
Ringo on the bongos.
That, for sure. But speaking of Ringo, even he gets a track here. Like, that was something that they did their entire career.
Yeah, here's Ringo. And there's a George one on here, too. Yeah. The lead-off track on the B-side is Don't Bother Me. That's a George Harrison song. That's the first George Harrison song to appear on any Beatles album. So
that's kind of funny.
It was cool, too. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, this is George. Because it's a little darker than the rest of them on there. Kind of a sullen track. But you're right. The Ringo tune. Which one is that? Is that I Want to Be Your Man?
It is. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that about George Harrison, because my note with Don't Bother Me was this the first George lead for the band? Apparently it was.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. I Want to Be Your Man. Like, there's just some snarl and power to it for the era.
Did you know that was released by the Rolling Stones first?
I had heard that there was, I don't understand like the dynamics and how that worked.
I couldn't figure it out because I saw different sources saying different things, but the Rolling Stones definitely released it first. Now, it was written by both Lennon and McCartney.
That's what I thought. Okay.
So they wrote it, but one thing I read said that they wrote it for the Rolling Stones. Another thing I read said they wrote it and they didn't think like it was their sound, so they gave it to the Rolling Stones and then they decided to do it themselves.
Oh, huh, okay.
So I kept finding different stories, so I don't know which one's true, so I'm not going to really expand upon either of them.
Interesting, yeah.
One of them said they wrote it in the room with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, and like Paul and John were just over in a corner writing this song, and Rolling Stones guys were just hanging out. Like, whoa. That was one of the stories. I don't know if that's
true. What a weird party.
Yeah, very weird. So that pretty much wraps up this album, dude. I mean, you already kind of said it. What can you say?
It's just 27 minutes of brilliance.
It's fast, and like you said, they cram some fantastic short songs. Like, just short and terrific. Loved it all the way through. It had been a really long time since I listened to early Beatles stuff, and I was very happy to revisit it because it was terrific.
Absolutely. Cool, man. Where are we going next?
We've got what is, in his own admission, and definitely in my opinion, a very Beatles-influenced group here. We've got the fifth studio album from Electric Light Orchestra. It's called Face the Music. It came out in September of 1975 on United Artists Records. And, actually, it came out in the UK on Jet Records. And the reason I thought that was interesting is I just realized my copy is the UK Jet Records version.
Oh, nice. Okay.
They're both the same, but I have the UK pressing, which is interesting.
Tell me 1, 2, 3, you're come me in. What's so fine? Where do you want to make my bow, bow, bow.
I'll tell you what, dude. I will go to bat for that Jet album. That Jet album was pretty damn good.
Good for you. I'm proud that you're able to admit that.
I liked it. I had it. I bought it. I liked it. I had it on CD. All right. So this isn't Jet. This is Electric Light Orchestra, ELO. So I'm guessing you've probably heard a couple of them, but I'm also thinking maybe you've not heard this album in its entirety before.
Yeah, I definitely haven't heard this album in its entirety. And dude, I gotta say, the singles that I knew, I was like, man, ELO sucks. But then I listened to the album and I was like, why weren't these the singles?
So I'm interested to hear which ones, because I'm one of those people. This album to me is, there's a couple of the albums this week actually that fit this mold. They're albums that my parents listened to when I was a kid. Mm. So beginning to end, I'm very familiar with this. And even the stuff that I wasn't like immediately familiar with, as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, yep, I know that song because my dad used to play the hell out of this thing. So I was into it from the get-go. I'm curious, what did you think of the mostly instrumental lead-off track, Fire on High?
Dude, I thought it was fantastic.
Just, it's wild.
Man, an ominous opening minute with the chants and those like really tense orchestral shit sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just like a really catchy shift into that power strum, and there's like electric fiddle. Like, it was a solid opener.
It's fantastic. It's one of those songs that has backwards messaging in it.
Okay.
Did you hear that at the beginning?
I had no idea what those noises were.
Somebody like speaking in tongues. Yeah. Basically, so it's the drummer, and what he says is, the music is reversible, but time is not.
Oh, turn wow. Back, okay.
Turn back, turn back.
So it really so is
that's
ominous.
What it says. Jesus. Yeah, it is ominous. So, and I remember my dad saying this when I was a little kid listening to this album. He said, this song reminds me of the story of the crucifixion. And it totally does. It's an instrumental song, but you can kind of hear it. They've got like the hallelujahs in there and like all these, it just sounds like ominous. And then it like is really bright, like you said, with the acoustic and the fiddle. It's a cool song, man.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I do know a couple hockey teams have used this as their intros at various times.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
New Jersey Devils and the Atlanta Thrashers, RIP Atlanta Thrashers. Now the second iteration of the Winnipeg Jets, I believe.
But oh, yeah, I forgot they're back up north.
Yeah, they're Gonzo from Atlanta.
They should be in Winnipeg. No offense.
Yeah. If all Canadian cities should have a hockey team, I think.
Yeah.
A NHL team. Any moderately sized Canadian city's got to have a hockey team.
I feel you.
All right, so that song kicks ass. So what are the other ones?
Honestly,
I was going to say, dude, Waterfall, I'd love it. It's
like,
awesome.
It cracked me up how McCartney-esque the vocals are. Mm-hmm. But dude, those strings, like there's no denying they make that track.
I love how prominent the strings are and on this whole album. But they really make it a different sound with the strings in there. It's really great. I love Waterfall. Mm-hmm. That was one that I was like, oh, yep. I remember being 8 to 10 years old or something, listen to this with my dad on a record. Absolutely.
Yeah, damn good. The next one I don't like at all. Evil Woman.
Evil Woman. And that's that's the biggest hit. And according to Jeff Lynne, that was the quickest song he ever wrote. He put it together in like 30 minutes. And it was intended to be kind of filler on the album. And it ended up being like their biggest hit.
That's weird because to me it totally feels like filler. Because the next song, again, like I really enjoyed.
Knight Rider, huh? Yeah. You liked the Knight Rider. I didn't have many notes on the Knight Rider, honestly. So what did you enjoy about it?
Like, I didn't have too much, but it's got a lot squeezed in there. We got some strings, big drum moments. There's some crazy falsetto.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you on all of that, especially going back to the strings. I mean, that's the thing about Electric Light Orchestra that really elevates it for me. Like, the prominence of the strings and the use of the strings and the different ways they're incorporating them really, it adds another level to this thing. So anything on the B side?
Honestly, I really like Poker a lot.
I did too. Guitar rocker.
Man, it's Queen-like. Mm-hmm. Before there's like a massive synth freak out, it's really frenetic and weird. I dug it.
I had to turn that one up when it came on because I was like, oh yeah, this one's good. I'm getting down to this.
Oh yeah, that's the stuff.
I had like a weird little slow bridge in it, and then back to the harder rock. It was almost like a punk rock track, at least the guitar was.
Dude, it's funny you say that, because one of my notes was quasi-punk.
Yeah, for sure. The next one is another one people maybe have heard, Strange Magic. Totally a Beatles-y song, no doubt. Mm-hmm. It's got those swirling strings to kind of kick it off, and then like a George Harrison guitar riff. It's very Beatles-y, but it's good. I like it. You might not.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's very Beatles. Again, this is one of those where I knew and I didn't like it.
I was singing along. But I'm always going to be singing along. So either of the last two, then?
Down Hometown was so weird.
Yeah, it was a British band taking on like American folk music with a little fiddle in there and kind of nasally country twang voice. I think they did a fair job with it.
Yeah, it was real country, real twangy.
Yep.
That's it for me.
Yep, same. And I have a biased opinion of this one because of my childhood memories of it. But I enjoyed it all the way through. No complaints. Most of the albums this week I enjoyed all the way through, to be honest with you. But it holds true with this one.
I thought it was kind of a mess in terms of flow between tracks. But at the same time, I think there was a lot of really, really good stuff on there. Giving them a tip of the cap.
Did you happen to check out the album cover?
No.
It's an electric chair that's like smoking. And then above it says Electric Light Orchestra in big metallic letters. And then below the electric chair it says Face the Music. It's pretty sick.
It is so weird. Not what I would expect for an album like this.
No, not at all. It's like almost a heavy metal album cover.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very like Ride the Lightning.
Yeah, the back cover too is real weird. They're it's like a picture of them pressed up against like a glass or something.
Ugh.
And their eyes are all like really dark, except for little white shiny spots in the all of them. It's creepy looking.
Yeah, no, kind of cool you. Though.
I like it. It's one of my. It's a cool album cover. I will say I like it a lot.
Cool, man.
All right, moving on. Number five this week. We're cruising. We have got Tom Petty's third studio album, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Damn the Torpedoes. This one came out October 19, 1979. What do you think of this one?
Front to back, just like an absolute great rock and roll album.
It is. It's another one that's terrific beginning to end. And these, I haven't really mentioned the sales numbers for most of these. They're all like, this one's triple platinum. The Beatles one obviously sold a billion copies. Face the Music was platinum. I don't think Autograph was.
It only in our hearts.
But the Knack was huge. So, I mean, all of these are pretty big sellers minus Autograph. So, this is the only Tom Petty album I own. I would like to own more because I really love this one.
It's a damn good one to own if you're going to own more.
No kidding. So, what'd you think of it?
Refugee. Starting off with that, I mean, my God. It's like, it's, you know, like, I want to hold your hand. What can you say?
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, Refugee, okay, here you go. Here's a world-renowned song that has been played on the radio for almost 40 years now. Oh, Here Comes My Girl, track two, same thing. Oh, okay, Even the Losers, track three, same thing. Like, holy shit, man.
I mean, it's iconic, really.
It is.
Here comes the girl. So, I absolutely love this track, dude. I love how absolutely guttural and passionate his voice is leading into the chorus. And then there's like that break of Sunshine. Like, I can hear so many bands of the modern era influenced by this one song. And it's my song of the week for sure. Just so many components. Just, oh.
I love it. I think that's a great pick. So that one was written by the guitarist, Mike Campbell. And then Tom put the lyrics over it. And you're right. Like, his vocal delivery, he's got some almost spoken word sections in there. That's just so cool. Yeah. The keys were one thing I noticed that really bump a lot of these Tom Petty songs up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, the little addition of what the keys are doing just takes it over the top. A little extra puzzle piece that puts it all together.
Dude, this song in particular I'm 100% makes me think of my wife. You. Oh, really? What's that?
Oh, I don't know. It just makes a song about seeing the woman that you love and feeling good about it. I don't know. It just makes me feel good.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I feel like it's a love song without like a heartbreak or like...
Right. He's just happy that he's...
Greasiness to it. Yeah. He just like enjoys love.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. And that's such a great point about the keys, dude. Like, Benmont Tench or whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't even going to attempt to pronounce it because it's kind of a tough name to pronounce for me. But yeah, it is Benmont Tench.
This whole album, like, Benmont is shining.
Crushing it. And even, Even the Losers, track three. I love that one too.
Yeah, I was just so ready to jump in the car and just drive with the windows down while this was playing.
Did the version you listen to, the digital version, so on the album version, there's like female voice that just says, it's just the normal noises in here. Did
that
on the digital?
Yeah.
So apparently that was guitarist Mike Campbell's wife from a demo that they were doing in his house. And he was complaining about like the washing machine or something. And she yelled that back at him and he recorded it and stuck it in the song. So I think that's pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah.
Pretty good song, too. I mean, lyrically, it's about kind of a one-night fling that Tom had with a high school crush that went later on down the line. Like, he was super into her when he was young, and she didn't like him back. And then later on, it's a true story, he got kind of hooked up with her one night, and she made it very clear to him the next morning that it was a one-time thing, which is hilarious. And he wrote this song about it. Even the losers get lucky sometimes. That's pretty great.
Yeah, this was the one where it really made it click that the dude was just rock and roll.
Absolutely. A little bit of optimism, a little bit of sadness in there. Great guitar. So, like, this whole thing is fantastic.
Yeah, at times it reminded me of, I don't know, like a more optimistic Warren Zevon.
Sure. I could see that, totally. So, for example, Century City, Track 5, is one I'm less familiar with, but it's totally a Warren Zevon. He's singing about a California city, and I think it's actually about a dispute he had with a record label, which is hilarious.
Okay, yeah, that sounds very Zevon-y.
Mm-hmm. And then, how about the B-side? There's a couple more big hits on the B-side, too, at least one.
Dude, yeah, I mean, of course, starting off with Don't Do Me Like That.
Is a directive in and of itself?
Yeah. Podcastception.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one where I was like, this had to sound so good on your system.
It was. The whole fantastic album.
Like, God.
Mm-hmm. Mike Campbell's guitar playing makes a lot of these songs, too. I know I mentioned Benmont Trench on the keys, but there's some great guitar. And I don't even know if it's all Mike. Tom's playing guitar, too. He's on the cover holding a 12-string Rickenbacker, looking pretty sick. So
yeah.
He's probably doing some of that stuff too, but it's just fantastic, dude. Oh, fun fact about Don't Do Me Like That. Originally, after Tom wrote it, he thought about giving it to the Jay Giles band because it thought it sounded like their sound. Can you imagine
can
old
totally
Magic
hear
Dick
that.
On harmonica wailing on it?
Oh, man. Magic Dick would be, just on another
slaying
level
it.
With this.
That was another one, dude, that surprised me. I really liked that Jay Giles Band album we listened to, Bloodshot. I might have to go back to that one sometime. Anyway, I don't want to get it off topic, but surprised me. Surprisingly good. Any of the last three, then, on here? All of them were good.
I mean, they're all good. I really liked Louisiana Rain as a closer. I just thought it was an awesome closer. Like, we've talked all about some good album closers, and I think this is up there with most of them.
Yeah, a little harmonica in there that really made it for me. Maybe want to head on down Louisiana way, kind of a country tune.
Yeah, it sets the scene, man. I always love that
for sure. And that's it for Damn the Torpedoes, beginning to end. Fantastic. I got nothing else to say about it. I loved it all the way through.
Yeah, I'm with you. Fantastic album.
All right, last one up this week, we have got Steve Miller Band 9th studio album, which I didn't realize it was that late in his discography.
Jesus.
Fly Like an Eagle. This one came out in May of 1976.
He had Capitol 9 Records. Albums by 1976. Jeez.
Yes. And I've got one of the older ones, so I'm looking forward to checking that one out.
Okay.
Yeah, 9 albums by 1976. Another one from Capitol Records. So we had several from Capitol Records this week.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good showing. Shit, pretty maybe that successful. Should be a theme. Record labels. This week we're going to talk about...
And this baby is quadruple platinum, so pretty big.
That makes sense. In spite of the awful album cover, there were a lot of hits on it.
It ain't so great. Yeah, it's just like a blurry photograph of him shredding up a Fender here.
Yeah.
Even the image on the back is better. If they had gone with the image on the back, it'd be better. So one thing I didn't realize until listening to this, because I never really looked into it. Steve Miller Band, technically, is three guys.
Okay.
I thought there was more going on, but there's only three dudes in this band.
Wow.
They have some guest musicians on some of these things, but for the most part, it's three of them up there just ripping it up. So, let's see. Jumping out off the bat, how familiar are you with this album?
Again, like just the single. Steve Miller Band never really jumped out much to me, but some of the stuff I enjoyed much more than I expected to.
I gotta say, dude, so this is another one I'm so biased on, because I know my parents had this thing on CD. We used to listen to it in the car on like long drives. At least that's what I thought. And then I got to looking into it. So my parents actually had Steve Miller Band's Greatest Hits on CD, and it contains like 3/4 of these songs, which is hilarious.
Okay.
So that's what we would listen to. So anything then surprise you on the A side? Fly Like an Eagle, people probably know that. Version that, god dang, who did the version for Space Jam? Wasn't there a Space Jam?
There was.
Was it Fly Like an Eagle in Space Jam?
Fly Like an Eagle. God, who was that? That's gonna drive me nuts.
Was it Seal?
See, I was thinking it was Seal. It's very possible.
That would make sense. Oh, yeah, totally. It's Seal.
Okay. That was the first voice I pictured. Yeah, like if you're going to know a Steve Miller song, this is going to be it. It's funny you mentioned like the growing up and your parents having that tape, because I feel like everything I associate with Steve Miller is like me working in the diner and this being on the radio almost constantly.
Yeah, I mean, there's some very radio-friendly stuff on here. There's also some not-so-radio-friendly, a little mm-hmm. weirder stuff, too. So
yeah, yeah, that some of that stuff really surprised me.
Okay, so Fly Like an Eagle, people know that one. I mean, it's kind of like a... It's been sampled and covered. I still think it's a pretty great song, honestly. It's funky, sure. It's kind of bluesy, a little spacey. Kind of cool.
Yeah, got some cool drums.
Yeah. Moving beyond the big hit here, what else stood out to you?
Serenade was a funky loved rocker. It. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't mind it at all. I thought it was pretty damn catchy.
I love that track, man. Another one, as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, yep, I remember this as a little kid listening to this. But nice. Man, it's a cool song. And I got to thinking, so this is kind of off topic, but okay, so my parents really liked this album. And I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, do you think there is any biology whatsoever that goes me enjoying this and my parents also enjoying it? Or is it all nurture? Is it all like we listen to it as a family and that's why I like it? Or do you think I'm biologically predisposed in some way to enjoy the same music that my parents did?
That's a good question, because I always feel like at times people are trying to rebel against what their parents like, but
mm-hmm.
and I feel like, you know, with the nature versus nurture thing, like with the nurture, like you definitely run the risk of overexposing it to a kid or something. Yeah, that's such sure. a good question, because there's some stuff like my dad really likes, like the Temptations and a lot of Motown stuff, but also like CCR and Steppenwolf uh-huh. and bands who I really enjoy, and I'm like, when did this come into play? And
yeah, I wonder if there is something biologically where it's just like we're predisposed to kind of enjoy things that I don't know if there's a chemical reaction that happens. Who knows? There's no way to really yeah. know, I guess. Anyway, moving along. Serenade kicks ass. I love that song. That was a weird question that came up. What'd you think of Mercury Blues, the cover of the 1949 Casey Douglas, Robert Geddens track?
I didn't care for this version, honestly. And I think, again, like this is something where my bias is kicking in, because I'm like, Alan Jackson's version is so good.
Alan Jackson's version is good. I will admit that. But I actually really like this version. It kind of had some Black Keys vibes, which
yeah.
obviously they would have been influenced by Steve Miller Band. In fact, they were. Black Keys are the ones who inducted him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Really?
Yeah, and apparently it was so not fitting, a good experience yeah. for them. He was a dick to them.
Oh my God.
I had no idea who they were.
Don't meet your idols, I guess.
Yeah, he was pissed off because he had requested that Elton John be the one to induct him. And the Hall of Fame said no, and then the Black Keys did it, and he was all dickish to him.
Man, that's too bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm raising an eyebrow at him being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But I mean, if you really...
Thinking about who isn't in there.
Yeah. I see that, but I think he's pretty huge. All right, B-side, what you got?
Take the Money and Run, like, I don't think it's a great song, but the rhythm section is just so steady. The claps are a hoot. The hoo-hoo-hoo parts are always fun.
That's a pretty good story song. Like, mm-hmm. I always like a song that tells a story, and that yeah. one's got a pretty good, easy-to-follow story. Even when I was a little kid, I could follow what was going on here, so I think they did it well. That one's also sampled and covered a lot. Let's see, track 8, Rockin' Me. That one, I just have one note on that one. So that song was literally created for the arena. In an interview one time, Steve Miller was talking about, so he was opening for Pink Floyd as like kind of a one-off thing.
Wow, okay.
In June 1975. And he thought about the gig and what he wanted to do with it. And it was going to be like bad weather and late at night and stuff. When by the time he came on, it was like kind of a festival or something.
Okay.
So he actually wrote this song to kind of try to get the crowd pumped up. That's where the song came from.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely sounds like it was written quickly, but it fit the bill.
It totally sounds like it was written quickly. It's repetitive. It's got a hook, but it's not a bad song. And I think it probably served its purpose at the time for getting people fired up.
Yeah. I wonder how close that version is to what was recorded.
What else you got on the B-side? Anything?
There were two that just were very unexpected to me. Blue Odyssey and The Window, because they just went real proggy.
Mm-hmm. Blue Odyssey was like a weird, spacey, 1 minute long thing. The Window was cool. The one for The Window, I don't know why, but he ditched all of his normal bandmates for that one. So the two guys that he's normally working with did not show up on that track. Okay. Just a bunch of new people for that song in particular. No idea why.
Maybe they just couldn't get the sound he was looking for or something. Because it's very proggy, very jazzy,
for sure.
Real mellow. Yeah, maybe he just thought, hey, let's get some people who maybe know this stuff better. Yeah, I have no idea.
Final thoughts on Steve Miller.
Look, like, I just wanted to have a nice, enjoyable time with this, and I did. Like, I don't love it by any means. It was a good listen. The flow was off for me a little bit, but not bad.
The first 3/4 of it, to me, is really, really good, and that includes the Sam Cooke cover, You Send Me.
See, I did not like that.
Okay, so here's what I would say. There are dozens of covers of that song, so mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of hard to stand out, but I thought it was a pretty good, pretty solid bit. I can see. Yeah. Yeah, 3/4 of the way, I enjoyed that. On the whole, for this week, I gotta say, pretty solid. There wasn't much to complain about.
Yeah, I can't really think of too many negatives on most of these. I mean,
all relatively short.
Times. Yeah. Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah. No double albums this week. Not bad. All right, bud. So, anything else you want to say before we have our didn't see that coming questions?
It was a good time. I think I enjoyed it much more than I had originally anticipated. Like, I saw the list, and I was like, okay, we can do this. And
Sure.
I mean, Autograph surprised the hell out of me in a very good way. And then, of course, like, Meet the Beatles and Tom Petty. Like, come on.
You can't beat them.
Yeah. Beat the Beatles? No way.
You can't do it.
All right, you want to start us off, or?
Yeah, I guess. My question's really weird, dude, so I guess I kind of have to explain the thought process for how I got to it, too. So, because it's so weird. So, directives. I got to thinking, all right, when do I use directives a lot?
Okay.
And I got to thinking, when I'm talking to my dog, because I'm always telling him to do stuff. Walter, stop barking. Walter, come here. Walter, put that down. Drop that. Stop eating that. You know, things like that. He picks up a dead animal off the side of the road. I'm always telling him to do things. So that's where I started.
Fair enough.
It's
a good way to start. Walter's a nice little badass.
Then I started thinking about other things I would give directives to, and that led me to robots. Because I feel like robots should never move beyond only doing what they're told and only being told to do certain things. I don't want them thinking for themselves. You know what I mean? I don't want a robot thinking for itself. So that led me to this question. If you heard a song that you knew was entirely composed and created by non-humans, by robots, by automation, how would that impact your feelings about the song? That's my question. It's a weird ass question, but if you heard a song that was entirely created by robots who were programmed to create a song, how would you feel about it?
I mean, I don't know, because I do like, you know, certain techno, certain electronic music.
Sure.
You know, certain synth-based stuff that, I'm not saying there's no heart to some of that stuff. Like, some of it there definitely isn't. It's meant to fill dance halls and make money. Fair play to them. I guess it would depend on the type of song. I mean, if it was a rock song, I imagine it's going to suck. And I hate when things are, like, clearly designed. Or I guess I hate when things are designed where the purpose is sell and commoditize.
Sure.
The music. So I would probably hate it, unless it was like an EDM song. Then I'd be like, okay, this basically just sounds like an EDM song.
There's still humans at the controls of a lot of those things. I'm talking no humans involved beyond the programming of these things to create music.
I mean, I'd be impressed for sure, and I would want to know, like, what in the world they're picking up. I would love it if their very first song they wrote was like some kind of weird like acid jazz or something. I'm like, wait, how'd you figure that out?
Where'd this come from?
Right. How about you? So,
I am sort of a Luddite. I'm not a big. I think I would be very, very skeptical. And then as soon as I found out that it was entirely mechanical created, I would probably be turned off just by the sheer. I mean, I have a weird thing, dude. Robots, really. Like whenever I see those Boston Dynamics videos, it disgusts me. Seriously, they creep me out. Like I'm afraid of them.
Dude, I'm with you. I'm like, why? Like what? What is there to learn or gain from this?
Don't make these things any stronger or more powerful or smarter. Yeah. Stop doing it. It scares me.
Yeah. It makes no sense. Honestly, like I would be really worried that that's where the industry was heading.
Yeah, for sure. That's true too. You can't take the people out of it. Anyway, weird ass question, I know, and I got there a very weird way, but there we are.
No, I mean mine isn't the most direct. It's a little circuitous too, so.
Let's go. What do you got?
Circuitous, I should say.
Nice work, dude. Working that in.
Meet the Beatles got me thinking about Meet the Deedles, which of course starred Robert Englund, aka Freddy, as Nemo. Jay, it's almost fall, so that means horror film season is around the corner. If you were to go toe-to-toe with a horror film baddie, who would it be, and how are you winning the fight?
So here's the deal, dude. I think I could whoop Michael Myers' ass. I know he's always like getting like stabbed and shot and shit and just coming back from the dead. But the original Michael Myers, the guy in the mask, he doesn't move very fast. He's just kind of like plodding along. I think I'd outsmart him, just outquick him. I got some high kicks. I kick him square in the mask. That's what I do. Michael Myers.
That's an interesting choice because he has Michael that Myers supernatural kick to the head. Yeah. Okay.
I'm talking Halloween 1. I don't know about any of the other. I'm talking number 1 where he's just like his deranged weirdo.
Dude, the reboot is so good.
I've never seen it.
Oh, man.
That's why I can't speak to it.
I saw it at like a midnight showing when it came out a couple years ago.
How about you? Who are you taking on?
I'm going after Chucky.
Oh, dude. Obvious choice. That's a good choice. I should have picked that one.
Well, I didn't even think about it until just now because I was thinking of the big three. I'll tell you what, the first thing I'm doing, I'm shooting him with a net gun, like insulting, getting him all tangled up in there. And then I'm just winding up and smashing against the wall.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a good time. Old Chucky. Yeah. He's so sassy. I don't like his little sass mouth.
Yeah, I almost forgot about that little pipsqueak.
I know, that's a great pick. I was trying to think of who else I would even consider taking on. I'm not taking on Jason Voorhees.
No.
I mean, doesn't he fights the devil in one of them, doesn't he, or something like that? So, yeah.
Anyone who goes toe-to-toe with Beelzebub.
Freddy Krueger, no. Nope. The Xenomorph from Alien, no chance against that thing, probably.
Zero.
You know, so not a lot of good options out there. I think Michael Myers is the weakest of the bunch, maybe.
Fair enough, yeah. I like it.
Sounds good, buddy. It was a good week. This was a good old week.
Yeah, this was a real fun time. So, our directive for you is subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, write a review, and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JayandJoeyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things in our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. And as always, be good to each other.
Be good to each other. Directive. There you go.
Hey, that is 5 directives. Wow.
I know.
a lot really crammed in there.
There you go.
Let me clear my throat. I played at a wedding one time, and I was the only one on the dance floor, and I was just going nuts. And people were like, how do you know this? I was like, you serious?